cultural updates. I'm Dee Dodson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on the closing of the beloved amusement park, Indiana Beach. Griffith leaders are hoping members of the Indiana House will be just as receptive to their ongoing efforts to exit Calumet Township as the state senators have been. Matt Rasnick reports on the Boy Scouts of America seeking bankruptcy protection. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with Ivy Tech President Sue Elsperman. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Updates. After almost 100 years, Indiana Beach Amusement Park in Monticello is closing. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Samantha Horton reports local officials were told the news Tuesday afternoon.
Known for its slogan, "There's more than corn in Indiana," the Indiana Beach Amusement and Water Park will not reopen this spring. In a statement, Indiana Beach says that despite significant effort and a great deal of investment in infrastructure and rides, the operations did not see a boost in revenue. Apex Parks Group owns more than a dozen facilities around the country and purchased the park in 2015. Last year, Indiana Beach and its parent company were sued after a boy died while riding one of the rides. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Samantha Horton.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson. State wildlife officials say about 200 fish found dead Sunday afternoon likely died due to natural causes. The dead shad were found near a Portage marina along the east branch of the Little Calumet River. The Indiana Department of Natural Resources Communication Director James Brindle says all indications suggest the fish died from, quote, a natural event. The Times reports that the DNR says shad die-offs are common in Indiana winters, especially when the temperature suddenly drops from the 30s and 40s to well below freezing.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Griffith leaders are hoping members of the Indiana House will be as receptive to their ongoing efforts to exit Calumet Township as state senators have been. Town Council President Rick Rifa told the House Ways and Means Committee Wednesday that Griffith needs additional options for joining a new township some 16 months after residents voted to leave high-tax Calumet Township, which also contains Gary. Senate Bill 365 would allow Griffith to become part of Ross Township should its efforts to join either North or St. John Townships continue to be unsuccessful. It also authorizes Griffith to become its own township as a last-ditch alternative to remaining in Calumet Township if none of the adjacent Lake County townships agrees to absorb Griffith by a November deadline. The committee is due next week to consider changes to the legislation and will decide whether to advance the proposal to the full House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Gary police arrested a 28-year-old man Sunday night after a relative walked into a room and saw him raping her 8-year-old daughter, court records allege. Donovan L. Wilson of Gary was charged Tuesday with child molesting, a level 1 felony. If convicted, he could face 20 to 40 years in prison. Lake criminal court records states the woman told police her daughter went downstairs in a Gary home with Wilson while she was putting her other children to bed. Records allege when the woman went downstairs to check on her daughter, she saw Wilson raping her. The woman told police she screamed Wilson's name and he began to act drunk and fell to the floor as if he passed out. The woman said the girl appeared to be, quote, shaking in fear, so she wrapped the child in a blanket and took her to a family member's home. When she asked her daughter if Wilson had ever touched her inappropriately before Sunday, the girl said, quote, it happens when you're at work.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Teachers once again gathered at the State House following up on their Red for Ed rally in November. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Lauren Chapman reports the Indiana Coalition for Public Education demanded action from legislators.
Representatives from several public education groups across the state applauded some of the legislative changes made this session, including a hold harmless measure signed by the governor last week and a push to decouple test scores from evaluations. But State Superintendent Jennifer McCormick says lawmakers still fall short of educator demands.
We do not need promises. I do not want to hear any more stories about who's related to an educator. I do not want to hear it.
McCormick and other speakers highlighted the 2020 governor's race. Whoever wins that race will appoint the state's next superintendent of public education. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Lauren Chapman.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana Senate Democrats are calling for greater accountability for virtual charter schools. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports that comes in the wake of allegations that two virtual charter schools inappropriately took $68 million in tax dollars.
A recent state report found the Indiana Virtual School and Indiana Virtual Pathways Academy enrolled thousands of students who never took a course and some who didn't even know they were enrolled. Senate Democrats call it systemic fraud that leader Tim Lannon says demands legislative action.
We need to have some guardrails. We need to have accountability.
Senator Mark Stoops points to his proposal to impose more rules on all charter schools, not just virtual ones.
An authorizer would be required to sign a bond so that in case there was fraud, as in the Indiana virtual schools, the state would have a way to get paid back.
Republicans have largely rebuffed Democrats' efforts in recent years on virtual charter schools. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The Boy Scouts of America is seeking bankruptcy protection. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Matt Rasnick reports, the Chapter 11 filing is an attempt to work out a plan to compensate several thousand men who say they were sexually abused as scouts. The Boy Scouts of America is seeking bankruptcy protection. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Matt Rasnick reports, the Chapter 11 filing is an attempt to work out a plan to compensate several thousand men who say they were sexually abused as scouts.
Scouts of America released a statement and a video outlining how the organization plans to move forward if its Chapter 11 bankruptcy is approved. There are 9 councils that provide scouting opportunities across the state of Indiana. The councils we contacted provided the same written response, which states local scouting would continue as usual. The video from the national organization says Boy Scouts is establishing a trust to compensate victims.
While local councils are not part of the Chapter 11 filing, they will have the opportunity to contribute to the trust to help equitably compensate victims.
The Buffalo Trace Council serves the southwest area of the state near Evansville. Scout executive John Harding says he doesn't know if his council will donate to the proposed compensation trust. But Harding says all donations that people make to their local scout councils do not go to the national organization. That money is used to fund local scouting experiences. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Matt Rasnick.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The U.S. Census Bureau is making an effort to address people's security concerns for this year's count. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Paola Marazan reports some Indiana groups are pushing to make sure everyone who's counted is protected.
With the upcoming census, concerns have emerged about the security of vulnerable populations, including immigrants. In Indiana, immigrants make up for almost 5% of the population. Miriam Acevedo Davis is president and CEO of La Plaza in Indianapolis. Speaking on the public radio talk show All In, she said the Census Bureau is trying to address some of those concerns.
Every time we've brought this up with the Census Bureau, they've been very specific about the data is protected. You know, the duty is to count all the people, and that is what the Census Bureau is trying to do.
Indiana receives nearly $18 billion, more than $2,500 per person in annual federal funding, according to state data. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Paola Marisan.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Motivated by his love for performing and his passion for children, RJ Griffith is using his influence in the local entertainment industry to encourage and inspire youth to live out loud through a unique monthly open mic event. I recently spoke with RJ about his organization and how he's shining a light on young talent.
Wake up in the morning. Feeling good, feeling great. I said every day I'm blessed.
Positive Vibes Only is a nonprofit organization created by Chicagoland inspirational singer-songwriter RJ Griffith to create a safe space where area youth can share their creativity and spread positive vibes. Founded in 2018, the organization hosts a monthly open mic in East Chicago. RJ, welcome to Lakeshore Public Radio. Please tell us what inspired you to create Positive Vibes Only.
So what inspired me was the fact that the youth nowadays don't have anything to do on Friday nights, really, and at least positive things, you know. And growing up, I didn't have any open mics or anywhere to go on Friday nights. So, you know, I just, you know, played outside or, you know, ran the streets back in the 90s, though, even though it was something fun to do, you know. But nowadays, there's just nothing but a lot of negative things around the neighborhoods for the youth. And we just wanted to give them something that they can do on a Friday night, especially to hone their crafts, whether it be, you know, singing, dancing, or rapping, or comedy, or just spoken word.
The open mic event is designed to give both children and teens a safe place to show off their talent. Why is it so important to create a judgment-free zone?
Yes, it's so important because we never know what the kids are going through, even at home or at school, the abuse that they go through, the torment, the bullying that children go through nowadays. And it's unbearable. And a lot of them, they express themselves through music, through poetry, you know, or through comedy, you know, just laughing through their pain. And you can't go anywhere to express yourself. You have to be 18 or over or 21 and older to go to an open mic, you know, downtown or anywhere in Chicagoland area. So I wanted to give young people that place that they can go to free of charge and just practice and get better and better, because a lot of them are their best selves when they have a microphone in front of their faces, you know. And I wanted to give them an opportunity to where they can go. They don't have to worry about anybody coming in and harming them. We have volunteer security. We have, and it was just a place where no one is going to laugh at them if they mess up, or, you know, if they just say something that didn't go over too well. We still show love, because bravery comes with stepping foot on that stage in front of people that you don't even know. And you're trying to show them your talent and your gifts. And we want that place to be a home to them so that they can come and express themselves at any point in time, every month, and they can take it to a bigger scale, you know, one day and make it a full-time job for themselves.
So you started Positive Vibes Only to bring together children and teens to have fun and share their gifts and talents. And I understand you covered most of the costs out of your own pocket. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So what happened was, I was just bartering with the church, and we ended up, you know, just, I was doing some audio recording for them, and they donated me the gym. So in exchange for my services, and yes, we were not a nonprofit yet. And so I was paying a couple hundred dollars out of pocket, buying hot food for the youth to be able to eat on. And I was charging like $10, but we weren't making our money back. And then I dropped it down to $5 because I realized that kids didn't have money. And so then we made it free. So I wasn't making any money back, and I continued to, you know, fund everything out of pocket. And it was starting to be get to be too much, but I couldn't stop. I was addicted to just giving back and serving regardless of, you know, if it broke my pockets or not. So and then I ended up meeting Pastor Manny at East Chicago Church, and he opened up his doors to me for free. And I still fund things out of my pocket, even though we're tax exempt now. But I just, if it's not going to get done, like through grants or donations, I'm going to put up the money every time, because the kids deserve to have a space where they can express themselves creatively.
Now, RJ, I understand that you have a unique collaboration with a local church to host the open mics. Can you tell us a little about how you came to work with East Chicago Church?
So I ended up meeting Pastor Manny, the pastor of East Chicago Church, at an anti-bullying event last year in April. And he heard me speaking about my vision for my event, that Positive Vibes Only, and he loved the vision that I had for impacting today's youth. And he opened up his doors to me. He said, hey, I would love for you to come and host your event at my church for free. And so we've been partnering ever since and, you know, doing different events in the communities, bringing different traction to his church. And it's been a great experience and opportunity for the both of us.
For those that have never attended one, can you kind of walk us through what we can expect at an open mic? And should you have the voice of a goddess, like, let's just say, a Whitney Houston or a Celine Dion, in order to step to the mic?
So when you go to an open mic, there's usually a sign-up sheet. So you sign up. You put what you're going to do. You can sing, dance. You can do whatever you feel led to do. And, you know, you don't have to be good at it. A lot of people actually start their careers at open mics trying to figure out what works and what doesn't work. And so I've, you know, starting off my career, I was going to open mics and just seeing, you know, how crowds react to different songs of mine that I'm singing. And sometimes, you know, they went over well, sometimes they didn't, but it's a great practicing ground and starting place for anyone that's looking to get into the entertainment industry. You can come in and do a monologue if you want to be an actor. You can come and do poetry and see how your poems, how the words resonate with the audience. So it's just coming and just being confident enough to get up there. The first step to being successful in the entertainment industry is just starting and just doing it in front of someone. And it gets easier with time.
And finally, RJ, for anyone looking to make a donation, volunteer, or just be a part of the movement, Positive Vibes Only, how can they reach you?
You can follow us and reach out to us on all social media platforms at Always PVO on every platform. And Facebook, it would just be Positive Vibes Only. To get to any one of those sites, you can just go on our website, positivevibesonly.org, and you can just hit the Contact Us tab, or you can just send us a DM on social media, and we'll respond to you as soon as possible.
Why are you stressed out? Why are you worried about those things? Life's too short. You should be enjoying life.
Positive Vibes Only will host its first open mic event of the year this Friday, February 21st at 6 p.m. at East Chicago Church. You can visit their Facebook event page for details.
We were all put on this earth for a bigger purpose, much deeper than ourselves. Find your purpose, and you'll find your true happiness.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's Regionally Speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with Ivy Tech President Sue Elsperman.
Ivy Tech Community College has over time here been expanding the number of courses they offer in their 8-week format. And coming up in March, they are going to be offering a record number of courses that students can take to get their higher education underway and not have to wait until maybe the summer or the fall to find out more about it. Let's check with the president of Ivy Tech Community College, Dr. Sue Elsperman. And Dr. Sue Osperman, thanks for joining us on the program today.
It is my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
For folks that are not familiar with the eight-week format, when did this begin with Ivy Tech Community College, and what were some of the initial thoughts that obviously you found that it's been so done so well, you've expanded it over time?
Here's an interesting insight. Forever, we've offered summer courses in an eight-week format, and interestingly, students always did a little better in that eight-week format. So 2.5, 3 years ago, we did our own research, looked nationally at community colleges that were offering eight-week format as that was beginning to become a little more common. And guess what we found? Every other institution, as they rolled it out, found the same experience. Our students, mostly adult, do better in an eight-week format. You might, by the way, recognize that most MBA and other adult-driven programs are offered in less than 16-week kind of formats because it fits adults better. Mm-hmm. What we saw in many communities colleges see is that week 10 or 12, students kind of just stop showing up. Life gets in the way, their work schedules change, something happens at home, and all of a sudden, even though they've made it through half the course successfully, that second half, life gets in the way. So as we saw that study results, we went to study really the best in the country being done in Odessa, Texas, and at Odessa College. They have had moved completely to that format, and in fact, their part-time students were graduating at faster rates than the other Texas community colleges' full-time students. Because when you take a course every 8 weeks, you actually graduate faster as well. So not only did students pass their classes, they were completing at a faster rate.
I understand, too, that, that it not only helps the students, but it also helps family members, too, of the students.
Absolutely. It gives you a different rhythm. So after 8 weeks, you have a week off. You come back for the next 8 weeks. You have Christmas break. You come back for the next 8 weeks. You have spring break. You come back, and then summer. So it really is it honors a lot of people. Families, employers can also, you know, you can adjust every 8 weeks based on the needs of your work schedule, et cetera. So we are very pleased with that. We now are about 60% of our classes are offered in an eight-week format. It probably will never be 100% because some classes are taught better in 16 weeks, and the student experience and other requirements keep them in that format. But we believe that within the next year, we'll be 75% or more. We've made this two-year transition, and in fact, to those listening, students do better. Mm-hmm. We see more than 5% increase in pass rates and 2 or 3% lower drop rates every semester, all things that help our students succeed and complete faster and get on with a good career.
Now, does the eight-week format help students that want to take more than one course? They maybe they won't be like the 16-week course for just one class, but they want to take more. So it would be more like an Ivy Tech Community College student would be almost more closer to the curriculum load that that a regular student at, say, IU or Purdue or Ball State would have.
Yeah, as a part-time student, they will probably take at least 15 credits a year, which is wonderful. And if they can take a little heavier, absolutely, they become closer to a full-time student, and we do, in fact, see that happening. It really is a good opportunity, and as we approach spring, March 16th will be our next spring start. So as we are talking about these five times that students can either start school, which, by the way, is another important part of eight-week courses. Instead of having just a fall or a January start, if you will, we now have five times a year that students can begin their journey, right? Instead of waiting until next August or waiting until next January, they can actually come in our doors today and be able to start March 16th.
That's right.
And we think that's really important in honoring adults.
Now, how does this change to allow for the March 16th start for courses affect those who are looking for help with FAFSA?
They should come on in today, get that financial aid underway, but also know that you might be aware, and as people are listening, the state has Next Level Jobs, which are many, many programs that are 1 year and less in length, certifications and certificates that lead to high-value jobs that, oh, by the way, then stack into associate degrees and beyond. So there are a myriad of ways that if they come in, we can get them started. But the sooner the better, because financial aid does take a little time to work through it. But if they come in our doors today, a good chance we'll be able to get them started March 16th.
Now, how are the faculty members and the administrative staff on the Ivy Tech Community College campus has been doing in helping make the adjustment to offer more 8-week courses as opposed to the longer 16-week?
Boy, Chris, that is a great question. I cannot say enough good about our faculty and staff. Faculty, as you can guess, you don't just fold it over and teach two lessons in a week. You really have to redesign the course to the learning outcomes and then think about how can I better align assignments, because you really are in a shorter number of weeks, so you have to think through those assignments and exams in a different way. Our faculty have done a wonderful job. That's why we've taken 3 years to get all the way fully implemented at scale. But our faculty have done a great job in doing that redesign and continuing to fine-tune and tweak it. For those of us who've taught in the classroom, you know it's not just one time and you get it perfect. Every semester, every term, you try to improve it. But it is working, and we'll continue to get better at this approach. And we certainly invite those who've never tried it to give it a shot. We know the majority of our students like the change and are certainly seeing better success.
Well, it sounds like the first step for anybody who's interested in enrolling in classes with Ivy Tech Community College is either come into one of the college campuses in the neighborhood and here in Northwest Indiana in particular, or by just going online on the Ivy Tech Community College website.
That's exactly it, and certainly we look forward to seeing them. And, of course, our goal is to make sure more Hoosiers have great careers that will bring them success and prosperity, and we're just glad to serve in this role. And, Chris, we appreciate you letting us share this story today.
Oh, we're glad to be able to do so. That's Dr. Sue Elsperman. She's the president of Ivy Tech Community College.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.